In behalf of the team, I personally thank the organizers for giving me the opportunity to chair this afternoon session. It's entitled Engaging All Healthcare Providers. So may I also introduce to you, being the National TB Program Manager of the Philippines, and to show that we have high support for the National TB Program, I'd like for me to recognize us all, our Assistant Secretary of Health from the Department of Health of the Philippines, a staunch supporter of the National TB Program, a true partner when it comes to public-private mixed dots. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a warm round of applause to our Assistant Secretary of Health, Elmer Punsalan. Thank you very much, sir, for your support. Okay, so at this point in time, perhaps we can start the session. May I call on the first speaker, who's really a renowned person when it comes to the field of TB control, known as the team leader right now of the Innovative Approaches and Health System Strengthening WHO's Top TB Department. Friends, let us all welcome the famous Mukunda Plikar for his public-private partnership.
Thank you very much, Lynn. Well, in this Stop TB symposium on working with the whole health system, I'm going to argue that it is possible to completely ignore some parts of the health system and yet achieve progress. I am then going to counter-argue that this may be a convenient approach, but it's clearly inadequate. And I'm going to then present you with some evidence that, at least so far as it comes to the supply side, which is the major part of any health system, it is indeed possible to work with all parts of the health system. And I'll conclude saying that you cannot claim to be adopting a health systems approach and ignore some healthcare providers. Let's go back in time a little. You are pretty familiar with this structure, a typical structure of a TB program in a high prevalence country. You are also familiar with this package, the famous DOTS package. What did the DOTS package do to the TB programs? DOTS transformed TB programs. The DOTS package converted the health systems from the ones that were not able to tell how many patients they handled and how, to the health systems which could then detect 50, 60, 70% of the cases, cure 80, 85% of them, and report them not just nationally but also internationally to WHO. And how did DOTS achieve that? The government commitment ensured that there was leadership and there were resources, financial as well as human. There was no ambiguity about the technology to be used or the products, the treatment regimens to be used. And context-specific approaches to service delivery were established in countries. And most important, continuous monitoring and evaluation made it sure that the essential health information was available. And you're all familiar with this structure of the building blocks of the health systems. So DOTS contributed to the six building blocks of the health system to achieve or to exploit the potential of the health system to do good for the TB control program. Now, why I am, and the results were obvious that the countries did make a lot of progress with DOTS. Why I am then saying that it is possible to completely ignore some parts of the health system and yet achieve progress in TB control? Because it did happen. The TB programs operated as if in the early years of DOTS implementation. They were all planned, designed, and implemented by the public sector, for the public services, and through public health centers only, in spite of the full knowledge that there were a whole lot of providers outside the public health services. And it's not just that, there were many providers even within the public sector, under the Ministry of Health and outside the Ministry of Health. And the results were obvious, the targets for 2000 were missed. And much has happened after, that's why my second conclusion, that though convenient, it was easy for the TB programs to operate only through the public sector, this approach was clearly inadequate. Much has happened after that. Countries have, after several small demonstration projects, there are many countries with good examples which have demonstrated that all these provider groups can be successfully linked and can be productively involved in TB control and can contribute substantially to TB control. And I'm not talking about these tiny projects where you give intensive inputs and you do proper documentation just to produce a paper. I'm talking about large-scale programs, you know, being operated in millions of populations involving thousands of providers. Now, we don't have time to go through, you know, talk about each and every provider groups. But let's take the ones which are seemingly difficult to work with. Traditional healers or informal providers. Now, why I have grouped them in the same box? Because they share many characteristics. They are close to the people, they are community-based, people have faith in them, they are culturally closer. Now, there is a difference that the traditional healers, well, they tend to be much more in Africa, while you will find more informal providers in Asian settings. Traditional healers generally do not use modern medicine, which informal providers do. And so in that sense, they could be more problematic, informal providers, because they could cause delay in diagnosis, they could misuse drugs, promote drug resistance and whatnot. Then let's talk about private GPs. They are in hundreds. How can an NTP work with hundreds of individual private practitioners? So we'll see one of the examples of this. We'll go to the other side, the so-called public-public mix, and talk about public hospitals. A pain to work with multiple departments. And then you have even greater, and there is no difference really between the public and the private hospitals because the characteristics are not greatly different. And then you have medical colleges. There's even greater, even major problem with the super specialists and the academicians sitting there. So let's see some of these examples and how countries have demonstrated that you can productively engage with these groups. Now, I can tell you that they can be, you know, independent presentations on each of these examples, but I'm going to just glance through. And I can also tell you that the real heroes, the people who have really implemented these programs, are or will be in this conference, and you can directly talk to them if you get interested enough. Now, I'm never tired of showing this slide. This is village doctors in Bangladesh, the so-called informal providers. Thousands of them who could otherwise be a major liability because they have access to drugs, they have their own pharmacies, they could use anti-TB drugs, give them to the patients. So doctors who would be otherwise a major liability for the TB control program have become a major resource. They contribute to detecting 15% of about 12,000, 15,000 patients detected every year. And even more important, more than half of the TB patients are supervised by these village doctors with cure rates of 90% or more. Now, why can't this be adapted and applied to the African setting where there is no dearth of traditional healers? I was in Malawi. There are 75,000 traditional healers in Malawi. And we went to the office of the president of the Federation of Traditional Healers Associations. They have a computerized database of all those 75,000 traditional healers. Are TB and HIV programs working with them? No. Some project here and there. Now, do we have to work for 6, 7, 8, 10 years to be able to, you know, do collaboration? Look at this experience of Pakistan. the NTP, which supported this Good Life project by it's a social franchising, social marketing franchising project. And look at the impressive contribution of private practitioners. And it's not gradual. From second quarter of 2006 to third quarter of 2006. And this is a scaled up project, millions of population covered, 5 major cities of Pakistan. In Karachi alone, 53% of all cases are contributed by private practitioners. Let's go to the third example. And again, I would like to impress on your minds that this is not just working with individual provider groups. I mean, there are other provider groups I am not talking about. But the approach is comprehensive. The idea is to engage every provider where symptomatics and patients seek care, including NGOs, medical colleges, hospitals, whatnot. But you can, if you use the right approaches, and I wanted to highlight different examples where countries have successfully engaged the different provider groups, which apparently, you know, some countries find it very difficult, almost impossible to deal with. China probably would not have been able to achieve the 2005 target of 70% if they had not set up an internet-based reporting and follow-up system that operated between the TB dispensaries and the hospitals. Wonderful example again. And I can tell you that the hospitals in China have almost all the characteristics of private hospitals in other settings. Another example of another leading country, India. Again, the approach is same. Engage all care providers. But look at the impressive gains that they have made, where a quarter of the cases detected come from big medical colleges. Now, they are very few in number if you compare to other services, hundreds of general practitioners, hundreds of NGOs, public health facilities, but look at the medical college contribution. You can successfully engage even with this academician, the super specialist, and get them to do the job. Now, you may be a bit bored with, you know, my showing these big numbers, but I would like to give you a glimpse of how does it really work in practice on the ground. And thanks to my friend P.K. Mitra, who works in India with JLRA, this is a replica of a notebook maintained by a health worker. And this is exactly what we propose. We say in our guidance from WHO that you should simply do a mapping of the providers. You try and sensitize them. You find out which ones are, you know, can be engaged. So look at these columns. I mean, I'll be quick. But if you see, there are these. So he has apparently done the mapping. And the first on the list is qualified private practitioners. 80 identified, 66 sensitized, potentially 12 could collaborate. Then you have RMPs. These are informal providers or quacks. So these are, you know, informal, unqualified, or maybe those who are trained in the indigenous systems of medicine. Huge numbers, 220, 83 sensitized, 52 potential providers. And then you have, you know, the laboratories, you have private hospitals, and you have other health programs also happening. And then he doesn't stop there. There are telephone numbers of doctors who are willing to, so that they can be followed up. And then he writes the notes that a diagnostic microscopy center is badly needed in whatever, in that municipality, and that a large number of patients are coming from outside the TU, etc., which needs. This is how it works, you know, simply in practice. And finally, there have been enough examples, I would say. And this, I would say, is one of the most leading examples in the world. The PPM in Philippines, they have institutionalized public-private mix. A third of country is covered. They have a wonderful accreditation system. There is a government-run health insurance package, a generous package for private institutions and providers. They have over 3,000, and I can tell you that this is a bit dated. These figures are dated because, I'm sure, you know, they have higher numbers today. And their contribution to case detection about 11%. And they would agree that in many countries, after achieving 70%, there is kind of a saturation in the public sector services. And the more cases that you're going to get, you are most likely to get from outside the public sector services. So, number of examples, scaled up, without doubt, these are not tiny projects. And that's why my second conclusion, that it is indeed possible to work with all parts of the health system. So what's the problem? Everything seems to be doing well. No, it's not that easy. Because although these numbers are good, impressive, these are scaled up programs, there is a long, long way to go. There are many issues. I would just talk about two or three. The scale up of PPM is pretty modest and very slow. PPM is not easy. It is demanding. A major issue is there are collaborating doctors or institutions, but there are many more who are not collaborating. Now we change the collaborators' practices there to become rational, and they do contribute. But what about those who are not collaborating or who are not likely to collaborate? There are no disincentives for non-collaborators. And the major problem today is the continuing misuse of TB drugs that happens. And the third major issue is PPM still is stuck with basic TB control dots. And it is not applied to other components of the Stop TB strategy. That is a major issue. What would be the simple actions? We have to invest to enhance capacities of both the public and private sectors to work together. And the strategy here, the tendency on the part of the national TB programs generally, is to of course work with the private providers or all providers, but in turn, the NTPs increase the amount of work that they have to do. The burden on the NTP of giving support, giving training, making supervision increases. The strategy has to be such that you increase the capacity of at least the institutional providers so that they ease the burden on the NTPs and not increase the burden. And those who were there yesterday in the DOTS expansion working group meeting with the professional associations must have seen the amount of, the kind of enthusiasm and the capacity some of the professional associations have, and all professional associations, all countries can potentially have this capacity of taking on a major part of TB control. This, I would say, is the most important, and with the Beijing meeting on the MDR-TB coming, I think the TB community must come together to limit access to TB drugs only to collaborating providers. This is not easy. People have talked about it. For years together, there have been resolutions about rational use of medicine. But the TB community with all its, and the partnership with all the high profile figures and the power it has, with the collaboration of the industry, because the partnership works with the industry, with the collaboration of the activists, the treatment action group, with collaboration with the people in general, we have to take this issue forward and make sure that the politicians take actions to limit access. I'm not saying ban. I'm not saying regulate. I'm saying limit the access of TB drugs to only those collaborating providers. And lastly, I fail to understand. It's been a long journey for those who have been working in TPM to come to this stage of countries accepting it, doing it, and now enthusiastic about it, that those who work in the other parts, on the other parts of the other components of the Stop TB strategy, it would be a great mistake of omission if they continue to operate as if this is 1995 and as if it's only public sector which exists out there. We have to work, whether it's MDR-TB or TB-HIV or ACSM or research, we have to work together now from the beginning with all the care providers. And that's why and you cannot claim all these, the working groups working on the different components of the Stop TB strategy to be adopting a health systems approach and continue to, not work with the whole lot of providers which we need to work with. So the first slide is also my last slide. Again, I would reiterate that it is possible. You can continue to make progress and continue to ignore some parts of the health system. And we should remember that. But it is not correct, and we have to continue to engage with all kinds of providers. I would reiterate that there is enormous amount of experience on how to work with different providers among TB program managers, in the regional offices, among partners, and of course those who are all members of the PPM subgroup. So if you are working on any component of the Stop TB strategy, if you are uncomfortable with working with any group of these providers which you haven't worked before, don't wish them away. Or don't try to reinvent the wheel. Just send the email to ppmtb@who.int and we'll be able to connect you to the right kind of people. And if they are not there, we'll be very happy to work with you hand in hand to be able to solve the problem you have. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Uplikar. Indeed, that was a presentation wherein you can see that models work from north to south, from east to west. And furthermore, our next speaker will talk on the engagement of academes, on associations, the report back from what has transpired yesterday during the DEWG report. So friends, may I call on Dr. Phil Hopewell.
Thank you very much, Lynn. I have a daunting task. First is to get the presentation up. There we go. Good. Okay. That task is to condense into 1/2 hour a meeting that transpired for the whole day yesterday. And that, as was mentioned, focused on the engagement of professional associations in tuberculosis control. I think this is a very appropriate topic and fits very nicely within the overall theme of this symposium, working with the whole healthcare system, and I think also nicely follows Mukin's presentation that provided a very comprehensive picture of how public-private mixed activities can work. So what I'll try to do is summarize for you the proceedings from the meeting yesterday. Our meeting started off on a sad note. Dr. Saita presented a tribute to Dr. Hassan Sadiq, who was a member of the public-private mixed subgroup, attended our meeting in Cairo last June, stayed for the DOTS expansion working group core group meeting, left, flew home to Pakistan, and was killed in a traffic accident on his way home from the airport. So we were all shocked and saddened by his death. The goal of the meeting was to mobilize professional associations to help foster effective collaboration between national TB programs and private healthcare providers. I've put these two terms in red to emphasize the importance of making the connection between the professional associations and national TB programs. The objectives were to sensitize the leaders of the professional associations on TB control to the Stop TB strategy and to the international standards for tuberculosis care, one of the tools that you'll hear me refer to as serving to as a way of focusing mobilization of the private sector and professional societies. Second, to share experiences on engagement of professional associations in TB control in diverse country settings. Third, to provide a platform for exchange of ideas between national TB program managers and leaders of professional associations for implementing the international standards. And finally, to discuss ways to enable professional associations to contribute to national and global efforts to control tuberculosis. Now, we led off with a presentation by Leopold Blanc from WHO, talking about the current status and the progress that's been made and the challenges that global TB control still faces. And what I'll do with each of the presentations is to present one or two slides to kind of hit the highlights of the presentations. So Leo pointed out that there were key issues from the perspective of WHO. And chief among them was that the case notification rate is not increasing in many settings. The good news being that treatment success rate has reached the 85% global target in many countries. But that he emphasized that there was a need to accelerate efforts in TB control by continuing to increase treatment success. 85% is good, but 95% would be much better. Aiming at reaching all TB patients, there's the famous 40% that you've been hearing about today that are not being reached, to shorten diagnostic delay. By doing so would decrease the amount of injury to the lungs and transmission of Mycobacterium tuberculosis to the community, thus improving the health of individuals as well as the health of the public. And finally, he went through a fairly complicated proposed framework by which one could identify areas in which specific actions could be undertaken to improve case detection and reduce diagnostic delays. And I won't go through that framework. I think you could probably sort it out in your minds, however, when you think about the path that's followed by a patient with a cough who comes in to the healthcare system. And Dr. Blanc also pointed out that to accomplish this required extending our actions beyond national tuberculosis programs, and you just saw several very nice examples of that in Mukunduplikar's report. This happens to be one showing the additive value of incorporating private practitioners and chest clinics and hospitals, even though government hospitals, they weren't participating in reporting to the National TB Program in Indonesia, in this particular instance in Yogyakarta. One of many examples of private and other non-NTP governmental facilities being incorporated into tuberculosis control activities in a systematic and effective way. I then reported on our experience with examining utilization of the international standards for tuberculosis care in the pilot countries, five pilot countries, that resulted in our writing this handbook for using the international standards for TB care. And as an outgrowth of that activity of examining the way countries used the international standards, it became apparent that professional societies can serve as very valuable collaborators with TB programs. Now, this is not revolutionary news. Professional societies have for many years been involved in collaborating with TB programs, but generally not on a very large scale, generally not in a very systematic way, and generally not overall contributing to tuberculosis control in a given country. But it became apparent in examining the uses of the ISTC that professional societies can serve as often the only conduit to their private sector members to disseminate information, in this case, the international standards and other information related to the international standards. That by their endorsing the international standards and by their involvement with the tuberculosis control programs, they give credibility to those programs. That the international standards provides a uniform way for both the public and the private sector to deal with patients with tuberculosis, and by so doing, gives credibility in the eyes of the private sector to public sector TB control programs. By providing technical assistance to TB programs in the form of treating complicated patients, in the form of supervision of laboratories that can contribute to the diagnosis of tuberculosis, a variety of ways in which they can provide technical assistance. They're also very good at providing training in conducting continuing medical education programs. Importantly, they can exert peer pressure by endorsing a set of standards and a given way of doing things. It pressures the members of the organization to follow suit and to practice in the same way that the organization has officially endorsed. And finally, professional organizations can be very effective as advocates for appropriate resources and policies, resources that serve to provide sufficient services for TB patients, policies that facilitate the accomplishment of the aims of tuberculosis control. And then just pointed out that there is a set of tools that is has been developed with the International Standards for TB Care, a set of training modules. The standards themselves and the handbook, and importantly, the patient's charter for tuberculosis care. And that was the next presentation we had by Case Gordon and a group of patient activists. The patient's charter for tuberculosis care was developed in tandem with the international standards, and these are mutually supporting documents. The patient's charter, as you may know, presents patients' rights and, importantly, patients' responsibilities. It's considered to be a very important document, recognized as being an important document in the community, but is currently very much underutilized, and this was strongly attested to by the group of activists that assisted Case in his presentation. But there are plans to make this a more widely utilized tool, plans to develop a condensed version of the handbook, or condensed version of the patient charter, to develop a handbook for utilization of the charter, and to translate the document into multiple languages so that dissemination and utilization can be more broadly undertaken. We next heard a series of country experiences, two from professional societies, Dr. Ashokan from the Indian Medical Association and Dr. Burhan from the Indonesia Society of Respirology, followed by three presentations from national TB program directors, Dr. Sitienai from Kenya, Martin Castellanos from Mexico, and Mao Taunang from Cambodia. And I'll try to summarize those very briefly, although I will not in any way be able to capture the full richness of their presentations. Dr. Ashokan gets the prize for the most idyllic picture presented in the presentation, and maybe the most idyllic title of his talk, An Indian Marriage. In this, he was referring to the collaboration between the Indian Medical Association and the revised National Tuberculosis Control Program of India. What Dr. Ashokan emphasized was that the IMA strategy for being involved with public-private mixed DOTS was that it was an approach based on the profession, the medical profession, that financial incentives were not the best way to go, and in fact a series of non-financial incentives, including accreditation, certification, and so forth, were more useful, that it was fairly labor-intensive and required one-to-one peer sensitization, and that the International Standards of TB Care proved to be a useful vehicle for focusing the professional society on the activities that needed to be accomplished to be systematically involved in TB control. But I thought what was perhaps most interesting of Dr. Ashokan's presentation were his impressions. He termed them his musings. I've termed them his impressions for my presentation. That the medical profession outside the national TB program is an asset, not a liability. All too often, it's been regarded, the medical profession, particularly the private sector, has been regarded as a liability. That concerted action by the medical profession can result in marked DOTS expansion and substantial reduction in MDR. This part we can document. This part to date I don't think is documented, but seems intuitively logical. Professional medical societies have a strong role in uniting the profession to fight tuberculosis. And again, that's clearly demonstrated in India and as well as in Indonesia. That all public-private mix activities related to TB are a kind of dialogue between clinical medicine and public health. And it's as much a political process as a technical one. But there is a chasm here between clinical medicine and public health. And the ISTC is the knowledge tool which serves to bridge that chasm. That the medical profession itself transcends the barriers between government and private sector, hence the profession-based approach, and that high-quality volunteers provide low-cost force amplification. This is a health system strengthening activity by enlarging the workforce available to NTPs. Dr. Burhan from Indonesia described the role of professional organizations as serving to socialize and disseminate, that is, make practitioners aware of the ISTC and to disseminate it, to have the ISTC as a topic for scientific sessions and seminars, to have meetings that have more of a hands-on approach for socialization and dissemination of the ISTC, and that professional organizations, because they have access to journals, newsletters, what have you, can disseminate the ISTC in that manner. As you can see, in Indonesia, they focus very heavily on utilization of the ISTC as the approach to involving the private sector. Her conclusions were that involvement of key professional opinion leaders and champions from the very start of the process for endorsement of, in this case, the international standards, was important for buy-in and acceptance. That by bringing people on board early, there was much more acceptance of this approach. That professional society members, generally private sector professional society members, relate more easily to the international standards than to national program guidelines because the ISTC presents the evidence and it's more clinical in focus. As Dr. Ashokan said, the ISTC can act as the bridge between the NTP and the private sector, as represented in the professional societies. Again, the ISTC as the bridging component. That professional organizations can assist the NTP in rollout of the international standards to their members. And finally, she mentioned, noted that, and this is actually an important part of this, that there will be an assessment of the impact of the utilization of ISTC in hospitals in Indonesia, with data being collected sort of before and after the introduction of the ISTC to get some assessment as to whether or not there's been a significant impact. Dr. Sitienai from Kenya pointed out that there had been substantial political commitment generated by the use of the ISTC and that the launch of the ISTC and the patient's charter was attended by the Minister for Public Health and Sanitation just last month, and that the ISTC, and it should say, and the patient's charter were endorsed by the minister. One of the points that was made in this endorsement was that there are plans to use the ISTC for accreditation of health facilities. Other ways in which the ISTC and the patient's charter will be used in Kenya is through development and dissemination of monthly cards for physicians in private practice. Each month, a different standard and message will be presented. This is kind of the fortune cookie approach to dissemination of the standards. Importantly, and I don't know of any other place that's doing this, all patient drug packs supplied to the private sector will contain the patient charter. And this will be followed by the government doing the same thing in their drug packs. And patients will be given the charter at registration. And as noted earlier, the ISTC will be used in an accreditation process for health facilities. Martin Castellanos from Mexico pointed out that in terms of achievements, that they've developed a Mexican version of the international standards. Local adaptation is important for making the standards most useful. And the first version of the Mexican standards for tuberculosis care was recently approved by the Ministry of Health. They also used this to develop an instrument for evaluation of involvement of private health practitioners. And they distributed the charter, again, a Mexican version of the patient's charter, distributed to tuberculosis patients in Mexico. The next steps in Mexico are to introduce the Mexican standards for TB care to all Ministry of Health facilities, to implement several projects in states with a high TB burden, as listed here. They're developing a national standards pocket guide, an abbreviated version. They're using this to engage specialist societies, and they're beginning to look at the capacity and quality of private laboratories, not something that the ISTC has proven to be or that relates to, but looking at the capacity of private laboratories as well as public laboratories conducted by the Epidemiology Institute in Mexico. Dr. Yang in Cambodia presented a very different approach. They've involved pharmacies working through the Pharmacists Association of Cambodia to develop a PPM strategy. They had to review and revise national recording and reporting forms to undertake this project. They developed a set of standardized referral tools for pharmacists to use, developed training curricula for the pharmacist, developed a memorandum of understanding between the Pharmacists Association and the NTP, and trained pharmacies and TB programs, had to train both the pharmacies and the TB programs in order to enable them to interact effectively. And they have ongoing supervision, monitoring, and evaluation in place to determine exactly how useful this is proving to be and what the problems are with it. In terms of achievements, they have gotten strong support from the Pharmacists Association. The role of the pharmacist is to refer patients, refer suspects, persons who are suspected of having tuberculosis to diagnostic centers. And they find that these referrals are yielding a high percentage of smear positive TB cases of those being evaluated. During this period, and they're referring to a 3-year period, there were almost 9,500 referrals. There was a fairly substantial drop-off. About half of the patients who were referred did not show up at a diagnostic facility. But of those who did, a substantial percentage, something in the range of 20%, were actually found to have smear-positive tuberculosis. And this result, as Dr. Young said, suggests that the pharmacies are really an excellent location to identify undiagnosed cases. This set of country experiences was followed by five discussion groups, and I'll really try to go through these very quickly. Again, I will not in any way be able to capture the full richness of the discussion that we had. Just to give you the overview, there were, as I said, five groups. The first one focused on the types and contributions of health professional associations. The second group on strengthening health professional associations to enable them to contribute to TB control. The third, what was needed by NTPs in the way of support to health professional association to enable the collaboration to be effective. The fourth group, promoting the patient charter for tuberculosis care. And finally, the fifth group, how does the public and the private sector work together to rationalize the use of anti-TB drugs? And this is a list of the types of health professional organizations or associations that were identified as potentially contributing to TB control and collaborating with NTPs. And you can see that there is a list that is very similar to what Mukun showed you of associations that could be involved. The Strengthening Health Professional Associations group identified a series of steps that were needed in order to determine what kind of strengthening was necessary. First, a situation analysis that may be a formal process or an informal process that identifies the problems that involvement of the private sector, involvement of the professional society would seek to solve. To work together to figure out what the structure was that was necessary to involve or to collaborate with the professional society, to develop specific objectives for the collaboration, to develop terms of reference, and finally an MOU, more formal sort of document formalizing the arrangement, and then to decide what was necessary within both the NTP and the professional associations to oversee the functions that are identified. And within that would be decided what the strengthening was that was needed to enable this to actually take place. So the group didn't actually present what was actually needed for strengthening, but rather the way to get at it, because it's going to vary with almost every situation. What's needed from NTPs to support health professional association? They concluded that there was no global blueprint for involvement, that there was no one size that fits all. Much as the second group, it was emphasized that there needed to be an analysis of the situation and a determination of what was needed in order to make this work. That working in as a true partnership was key, that there be equal respect by all partners involved, that there would be a lot of learning by doing and a lot of feeling one's way along as this process played out. And it wasn't something that could be undertaken and fixed very quickly, that it would take time. And I think the presentations from the country certainly documented that. Promoting the patient's charter for tuberculosis care, it was generally agreed that there was a striking and inexcusable lack of awareness at all levels of the patient's charter, that even where there was awareness, there was inconsistent application. There are no guidelines for its utilization and implementation. There has been a substantial shortfall of resources for a variety of things related to the patient's charter, including developing the handbook for its utilization and also for quality controlled translations. That to overcome these limitations, there was a need for a political commitment to ensure that the resources for implementation were available. It was noted that the patient's charter reflects good clinical practice, but in fact is not implemented in most countries. that efforts need to be specifically directed toward empowering communities to engage and to force the issue, if you will, of implementation of the patient's charter. And that to do that would require ongoing involvement of patient organizations and professional associations. Finally, the group on working together to rationalize the use of anti-TB drugs. It was noted that there was the need for country and regional specific approaches, that there needed to be better data on the current situation, particularly utilization of anti-TB drugs in the private sector. That it would be important to map and involve a wide range of professional associations and other stakeholders outside of the NTP to improve rational use of drugs. And that the stakeholders should be involved in developing, in the development of national TB program plans, including MDR plans, particularly in the 27 high-priority MDR countries in preparation for the MDR meeting in China. So that's a very quick summary of the afternoon's discussion groups. And I'll conclude with this one slide with a bunch of boxes and a bunch of arrows. I think health systems people about every year get together and they shuffle the boxes and they shuffle the arrows, and so it looks like there's something new coming out. But in fact, what's important in all this is that they all lead to improved TB care and control. And the professional societies can, in fact, play a very important role in that outcome through their ability to disseminate and communicate with members, providing technical assistance, setting standards, accrediting and certifying, all these being activities that improve the quality of care by providing clinical care, either direct DOT services or management of complicated cases, by strengthening laboratories in the private sector. In effect, these two activities expand the workforce and increase laboratory capacity, and all of these then lead to the desired outcome of improved TB care and control. So I hope I've given you some flavor for what went on yesterday. I think it was a very exciting meeting is what we think will be the first step in a set of activities that is designed to bring professional societies and national TB programs much more closely together globally. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much, Dr. Phil Hopewell, for that substantial synthesis of what transpired yesterday during the DEWG's meeting. Our third presenter is, allow me to introduce her in this sense, because she's really a living legacy of the TB control program of the Philippines in terms of really putting concrete action to what the word public-private partnership is all about. And indeed, this is also one of her expertise when it comes to how we can really achieve cases of improving CDR in our national TB program. So colleagues, let me call on Ms. Amelia Salmiento to deal on the engaging of public-private partnerships.
Something went wrong.
Escape.
Yeah.
Last. That's right.
Thank you very much, Lynn, for that very nice introduction. Lynn is from the public sector, and I am from the private sector. So here is a partnership between the public and the private sector. And we have been working together for such a long time. So my presentation will be about expanding public-private collaborations for TB in the Philippines. First, I will be telling you about the rationale for engaging the private sector in the Philippines. Then I will be telling you about how PPMD started as a national strategy in the Philippines, the process on how we engage the private sector, what has been achieved so far, how do we sustain PPMD, how do we monitor PPMD sustainability, and what will be the future direction of PPMD in the Philippines. In 1997, a survey was conducted in the Philippines. One of the questions asked was, if you had symptoms of TB, where would you usually go? A significant number of respondents said that they prefer the services of a private physician. 36.2% of them responded that they have confidence in the services provided by a private MD. Several pilot projects on engaging the private sector was developed. There were models in the hospital models, there were coalition models, and models in the public sector to see whether it's really possible to engage the private sector and to address this behavior of TB symptomatics. In 2004, PPMD became a national strategy in the Philippines. The first thing we did was to develop a guideline for the implementation of public-private mixed DOTs in the Philippines. The Department of Health issued a circular for the adoption of the operational guidelines for PPMD in the Philippines under the National TB Control Program. The objectives of the PPMD is to increase case detection and to synchronize management of TB among all healthcare providers. Second, we would like to ensure compliance to the National Tuberculosis Program policies for case finding, case holding, recording, and reporting by all healthcare providers. The first thing that we really did was to look at the structure of the private sector and the public sector in the Philippines. So we have here on the right side the Philippine Coalition Against Tuberculosis. It is the umbrella organization of organizations working for TB control in the Philippines. We have as members professional societies, non-government organizations, and corporate groups. On the left side, we have the Department of Health, who is the main organization accountable for TB control in the Philippines. So as we see here, we have here in the left side the Department of Health, and we have here on the right side the Philippine Coalition Against Tuberculosis, representing the private sector. What we did was to create a committee for the implementation of private-public mix in the Philippines. So we have a national coordinating committee, and we also have a regional coordinating committee. The role of the committees representing both the public and the private sector is for policy formulation, providing technical assistance, and looking into the implementation of the public-private mixed DOTs strategy in the Philippines. At the national level, we have the National Coordinating Committee, chaired by the Department of Health, co-chaired by the Philippine Coalition Against Tuberculosis. At the regional level, we also have regional coordinating committees, chaired by the director of the Centers for Health Development in the region and co-chaired by the chair of the local coalition. It is at the lowest level where we have all the engagement happening. This is the installation process in engaging the private sector. As I have said earlier, the engagement happens at the lower level. So it is where we're going to establish a public-private mixed DOTs facility. In the beginning, what we did was to conduct a central planning workshop where we invited the DOTs providers who would like to to participate in the public-private mixed dots strategy. What we do in the central planning is build their capacity to engage the private sector at the lower level. This is at the local level. So during the central planning workshop, what we do is identify, map out the stakeholders. When they go back to the local area, what they will do is to try to generate commitment from the various stakeholders, including private referring physicians. This is done during the advocacy symposium. Then they will have meetings for trying to figure out what will be the content of the memorandum of understanding between the stakeholders and the PPMD unit in terms of the role identified during the planning process. Between the referring physician, the private individual referring physicians, we have a letter of agreement that they agree to refer their patients to the public-private mixed dots facility. And there will be a launch of the public-private mixed dots unit. Later on, there will be continuous monitoring of the engagement, and there will be continuous relational sustainability between the unit and the stakeholders as well as the individual private physicians. What has been achieved so far? This is the map of the Philippines showing the location of the initial 7 public-private mixed dots that we installed under round 2 of the Global Fund project. It covered a population of 2.5 million, representing about 3% of the Philippine population at that time. In 2005, we installed additional 21 PPMD units. Then there are now 28 operational PPMD units, and this covered a population of 6 million. In 2006, additional 42 PPMD units were installed under round 2 of the Global Fund project, making a total of 70 operational PPMD units covering a population of 14 million of the total population of the Philippines. Again, we were able to successfully get support from the Global Fund. We have the round 5, a Global Fund project, and in this project, we installed additional 47 units of PPMD in the private sector and also in the public sector. And in 2007, we have a total of 117 units operational covering a population of 30 million, representing 34% of the total population of the Philippines. And this year, we installed additional 52 private public mixed dots facilities. And now we have a total of 169 units in place, 70 under the Round 2 project, and 99 under Round 5 of the Global Fund project. There were also other PPMD units that were self-installed and installed under various initiatives. So in 2008, we now have a total of 17 coordinating structures, the red ones, 1 national coordinating committee, 16 regional coordinating committees, and we have 220 public-private mixed dots facilities where the private sector, particularly the private referring physicians, can refer their patients for case finding or treatment. The coverage now is 36 million of the total population of the Philippines, and this represents 40% of our total population. What has been achieved so far? This is the PPMD contribution to CDR in the areas covered. In 2004, we have 7 units operating, and the contribution in the areas covered is 77%. This increased to 11% in 2005. In 2006, this was again 11%. And in 2007, this further increased into 40% in the areas covered. This is the CDR contribution among the estimated cases in the areas covered. Nationally, the PPND strategy in the Philippines contributed 0.2% in the CDR for 2004, 0.8% in 2005, 2% in 2006, and in 2007, we detected 5,615 new smear positive cases from the private sector, and this represents 5% of the total estimated cases in the Philippines. This is the trend in case detection. The blue line is the detection rate in the public sector. And if you will notice, starting in 2004, hardly is there any increase in the detection of cases in the public sector. But because of the public-private mix strategy that we were able to place in place, there was a continuous increase in case detection in the Philippines. And in 2007, of the 76% total case detection rate of the NTP, 5% of that was due to the public-private mix dots strategy in the Philippines. We have also observed excellent treatment outcomes in our public-private mix dots strategy. In 2006, we discovered a total of 247 smear positive cases from the private sector. The cure rate was 89%, and the treatment completed is 2%, for a success rate of 91%. In 2005, there were 893 smear positive cases discovered from the private sector, and the cure rate was 87%. Treatment completed was 4%, for a success rate of 91%. In 2006, a total of 2,223 new smear positive cases were detected from the private sector, for a cure rate of 87%. Treatment completed was 4%, and the total success rate was 91%. One very important thing in PPND is to sustain the initiative and the gains that we have done. What we did was to identify the domains of sustainability, and we were able to identify four domains: technological viability, economic viability, political viability, sociocultural viability. We would like to achieve sustainability and equity in our PPND strategy. When we talk about technological viability, it means continuously providing quality DAT services beyond the support of the Global Fund. For economic viability, we have to ensure that we have adequate fund source to sustain our PPND initiatives. For political viability, this is measured by the support given by the local government to the PPND initiative, as well as the private sector. And for sociocultural viability, we talk of universal access to quality DAT services, a patient-friendly staff, and public-private partnership. How do we achieve sustainability? For technological viability, we have continuous capacity building. We have the DAT certification and accreditation. We have monitoring and evaluation. We have very good logistics management to ensure that we have continuous supply of anti-TB drugs in our public-private mixed DAT facility. And we have sustained human resource developments, and we have reward system. For economic viability, we try very hard to recover the cost of running a PPMD unit. And we have a PhilHealth outpatient package in the Philippines where for every referred TB patient, who is a member of the insurance system, the PhilHealth, there is a reimbursement of approximately $100. And we are looking into the possibility of introducing user's fee. For political viability, we continue to advocate to the local government for policy support. In terms of support for TB budget, and we also continue to advocate to the private sector, the owners of the private hospitals, private clinic for corporate social responsibility. To achieve sociocultural viability, what we do is to have coalitions at the different levels, at the regional level, at the local level, and we go for community organizing as well as distribution of IEC materials and behavior change communication materials. How do we monitor the PPMD initiative? What we did was to have the strategic direction for each of the components for viability, and we have indicators for the viability. The sample is for technological viability. We measure viability in terms of the percentage contribution of PPMD to case detection rate, the cure rate of new smear positive cases, the percentage of compliance to DOT certification standards, and the frequency of the meetings of the TB Diagnostic Committee. These indicators were agreed by the public and the private sector, representatives of the public and the private sector. And this is the direction that we would like to take in the next 5 years, to have at least a contribution of 10% from the initiative and 85% cure rate and 100% compliance to the DOT certification standards. And at least every month, the TBDC, the TB Diagnostic Committee, would meet twice a month. And this is our monitoring tool for sustainability. This is used every time we monitor the PPMD initiative. It is the PPMD unit that we monitor every month, and we try to determine what is the performance of the PPMD unit in terms of the 13 sustainability indicators that we develop. Last September, we had a program implementation review for the public-private mixed DOTS implementation in the Philippines, and we introduced the evaluation wheel. And it has also the components of sustainability, technological viability, political viability, sociocultural viability, and financial viability. We introduced a scoring system for each of the sustainability elements. And then what we did was to have an overall score. For each of the sustainability element, the highest score is 10, and for the overall score, it's 40. So in terms of viability, the PPMD initiative in the Philippines has high potential for sustainability as far as technological viability is concerned. And we have also a high potential of sustainability for sociocultural viability, and we have moderate potential for sustainability for the financial aspect and the political aspect. So the challenge now is to ensure that we get the political support of the local government unit as well as the administrators of our private initiated PPMD units, and we have also to look into how it would be possible to recover the costs of public-private mixed DOTS in the Philippines. What is the future direction of PPMD? We will now have a countrywide engagement of healthcare providers using the ISTC under the rolling continuation channel of the Global Plan. We have just been approved of the rolling continuation channel has been approved for round two, and this is where we will do countrywide engagement of healthcare providers using the ISTC. We will also expand TB services being provided by our public-private mixed DOTS facility, and this will now cover TB in children and MDR TB. When we do the final scale-up, We will now have covered 90% of the total population of the Philippines, and we will be installing 44 provincial coordinating committees for PPMD to manage the expansion of the PPMD initiative in the Philippines to cover 90% of the area. And this is PhilCat, the Philippine Coalition Against Tuberculosis, and we fight TB through unified action together with the public sector. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Ami, for that indeed very unique, very innovative way really of addressing public-private mix. We have had three speakers dealing on global concerns about PPMD, how professional societies can be further engaged, and we have here an example, a country example really, of how PPMDs can be institutionalized, context of systems and in the context really of a program. So may I invite the three speakers, Dr. Mukund Aplicar, Dr. Phil Hopewell, and Ms. Amelia Sarmiento, to join me here and respond to the queries or inquiries or any other things that our audience would like to clarify on. We have microphones on the aisle, please. Kindly introduce yourself, and we would be gladly responding to your questions. Any questions? Yes. First we have the professor from Vietnam, then Dr. Yap Brockman, and then the lady on my right. So we go from left to right, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am Dr. Hương from Vietnam. I would like to have a question to Dr. Sarmiento. That means for the treatment of tuberculosis, the follow-up is very important. And now, my question is, if a patient is detected and treated by a private practitioners, who will do this survey? Does he has a special health worker for this function, or he will refer the patient to the TB network?
In every locality where we have this public-private mixed DOTS facility, what we did really was to install either a private DOTS facility or a public DOTS facility where a private referring physicians can refer patients in the DOTS facility for either for case detection or case holding. So the one that really manages the observation of the daily treatment of the patient is the DOTS facility. So the role of the physician is only to refer patients. But we have a very strong referral system where the public DOTS facility or a private initiated DOTS facility would give feedbacks about the progress of the patient's treatment to the private referring physicians. And this is done every 2 months when there is a sputum follow-up. But managing the patient is really the responsibility still of the DOTS facility. So it's merely referring of patients to a DOTS facility, whether it is a public-initiated DOTS facility or a private DOTS facility.
I thank you for your explanation. Okay. But and the second question is possible. That means in the manual of the international standard, it is preconized to have a so-called a second people. For me, I prefer to use the third people. That means someone who is something like a tie between the doctor and the patient. And it is said that we have to recruit these people from the community. This can be a previous patient, family members, or a civil society member. So I would like to ask if you have any experiences to use these people. How to do we recruit these people? How will you train them? And mostly, which will be the relationship between the doctor and this patient? Okay. Thank you.
So the patient is really handled by the referring physician. It's still the patient. And that facility helps the physician ensure that the patient will be able to complete the treatment. So what we really do in this public-private mixed DOTS initiative is to teach DOTS facility, the DOTS provider, how to engage the private doctors. And we also tell them to maintain the relationship between the private doctor and the DOTS facility. And usually what they do is to have meetings between the private physician and the DOTS facility. So they have regular meetings with the private referring physicians. But initially what we do is to have a symposium where the DOTS facility informs the stakeholders and the private physicians about the services of the public DOTS facility or the private DOTS facility. And then we have the signing of the letter of agreement between the private referring physician and the DOTS facility. And we really encourage the DOTS facility to give feedbacks to the private physicians. And what we do during the process of the PPMD initiative is to monitor the engagement of the private physician. So we have what we call an active referring physician, defined as having referred a patient, at least one patient in a quarter. So we ensure that there is continuous relationship between the DOTS facility and the referring physicians and also the stakeholders.
Okay, so may we call on the next person to question, Dr. Yap Brockman.
Thank you very much, and it's for me a real pleasure to talk after Professor Huongwu. 25 years ago, we were in a similar situation. I'd like to compliment all speakers with their presentations, and I'd like to stress one issue that Mukund Uplikar mentioned, and that is we are taking all this effort, and I think the energy brought in the Philippines to reach out to all care providers is a beautiful example, really, to improve treatment of patients, but at the same time to prevent the misuse of the first-line drugs. And I think it is time now really seriously to think to help this initiative by perhaps some global initiative or some systematic approach country by country to stimulate a legal framework in which over-the-counter sale of drugs is being banned and in which drugs are being TB, the whole use of drugs in the outside NTPs and certified, perhaps between parentheses, other healthcare providers is really brought under some control. I think actually it's a very cheap measure because it doesn't ask for money. It asks for a proper legal framework. And so I think some systematic initiative is now really, it's time to, we have the Green Light Committee trying to prevent misuse of second-line drugs. We have DOT to try to prevent the misuse of first-line drugs. Let's do something very basic, no over-the-counter sale of first-line drugs and similar things.
Okay, so Dr. Uplikar, please.
Yeah, just, I mean, of course, cannot agree more. But the amazing thing is it can be done. I mean, how can Tanzania do it? How can Malawi do it? And why can't India and China or Thailand do it? So there are examples, and there has to be concerted action. I think what is important is, because efforts by TB programs alone will not be able to do it. So it has to have the political commitment. But even, there are many players like the industry and the people. So I think all have to come together. Otherwise, it will come to a stage, as Mario said yesterday, that if the misuse of drugs is continued, then perhaps in a few years we will see the TB epidemic replaced by a MDR-TB epidemic all over.
Okay, yes, please.
Oh, yes, I am Dr. Michel Lafay. I am a French physician. I am by no means an expert in TB, but I was privileged to work in the Philippines for several years, starting in 1983. And I want to ask Dr. or Mrs. Sarmiento a question about the cultural minorities, the indigenous people, especially in so far that when I make an inquiry about their conception about diseases, many told me that they consider like this symptom, like spitting blood or becoming emaciated and slowly dying, which is really can be referred as TB symptoms, as coming from supernatural reasons, and that it would be entitled to have treatment by shamanism, etc. And so I would like to ask you if in dealing with such a patient you have found more difficulty to treat them, or I can also, if I can share some of my experience with you, I had to deal with a cholera epidemic sometimes, and if they accepted me to put some infusion, they had insisted also that they wanted to have before the chanting, the people around, and so there was a mix of two conception and two system of treatments, and I am wondering if you have some experience now. Of course, it was long time ago, so and I was in a specific place, but maybe do you have any experience of some kind of difficulty or particular case that you have to deal with like that? Thank you very much.
Actually, our initiative now is focused mainly in working in areas where there is a critical mass of private practitioners, because our initial intention was to engage as many private practitioners as possible. But so I cannot remember exactly which of our PPMD units is doing work in this, targeting this group. But in this next scale up, where we will do the provincial engagement, this is now the time that we will address the needs of the indigenous people, and we will try to develop a strategy to engage them and to ensure that the DOT services that we provide is suited to their needs, and their sociocultural characteristics has been taken into consideration. So this is now the second part of our scale up, where we will be working in areas where we did not reach in this initial scale up.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad about that.
May I also respond to that, being the partner of AMI from the public side, because this is actually public-private partnership. Yes, these indigenous populations constitute, if you would recall, the Global Plan Strategy number 2 that's addressing the high-risk populations, marginalized populations, in which we have to look into mechanisms, in which we have to look into other considerations of how we can address them. Probably going beyond a simple DOT strategy may not be the option, but looking into how cultural differences or cultural variations among tribes should be taken into consideration once you try to go into addressing TB control in these special populations. And that it's already our second phase, because we would like to go beyond the core population of our constituencies, of the localized populations in the country. Yes, I see the doctor here, and I saw, yes, okay.
Thomas Chiang, GLRA consultant, seconded to NTB Pakistan. I just want to make a comment on what Mukund had mentioned about the sale of drugs over the counter, and a question. The comment being that we do have some situations in Pakistan, especially with regards to the sale of ATT drugs, where in pharmacies very, very close or just opposite the district headquarter hospitals. It has come to a point that since ATT drugs are freely available from the DHQ hospitals, the local pharmacies no longer stock them, because they say it's no longer no longer beneficial or profitable to continue using the drugs, to sell the drugs. So I think something like that maybe should be done, that we ensure the availability of quality and effective drugs in the public sector, or even the DOTS sector, DOTS providers, so that gradually the pharmacists no longer find it profitable to even to use the to stock the drugs. Now, my query to Mukund is: you mentioned that gradually there's an increase in the number of patients being referred from the PPM activities, Now, do you foresee the danger that at one point of time, complacency will arise in the public sector to the point that they will just give up, say, okay, let the private sector keep on doing it? I mean, and if it does happen, what would you suggest as remedial measures?
That's a good question. But if you see the whatever graphs I have shown, the contribution of private sector is minuscule. Even in the Philippines, which is, you know, which has such a comprehensive initiative with a government-supported generous benefits package, the contribution of the private sector is just 6-7%. So I don't foresee the private sector taking over TB control.
The
Well, I'm uncomfortable with this dichotomy, because if you look at the people or if you look at the population, all we need to do is, you know, whatever the patients there are, they should receive good care. Now, who does it doesn't matter. Because if you think from the point of view of a district TB program manager, he is supposed to detect as many cases as possible by different sources. So if you have that philosophy of that, this is my area, I should be working as much as I can, and then it may be in some places, one of the things which I did not mention in my presentation, that it may not be reasonable to expect national TB programs to take on and do all this. And all these successful initiatives, you know very well, in Pakistan, there is no way the national TB program of Pakistan could have connected or linked with thousands of practitioners and detected whatever 7,000-8,000 cases in Karachi. It was possible only because you took help of the project. And you supported that. You are not doing it. But that support is very important. Same thing in Bangladesh. It is not the NTP, it is the Damien Foundation. But this idea of not just trying to do everything ourselves, but getting things done. So I would say that the NTP's role will change eventually if there are more and more partners to strengthen the supervision, the monitoring, and then it may go low on actually giving care if other providers are taking care of it. So it's a change of role rather than complacency, I would say.
Okay, yes, please.
Anne Fanning, Canada, and congratulations to all describing what is really an abominable divide between public health and private medicine. So, and the tools and the interventions are really amazing. So I have a question that would ask any or all of you, why aren't we starting at the preclinical level? And why aren't we engaging physicians in training, nurses in training, in the needs and the demands and the importance of their role in public health of a broader nature? There was an enormous activity by Charles Bolin and Unisol and Pierre Chollet. What has happened to that? Is it moving forward?
Okay, yes, Dr. Hopewell, please.
Well, this is certainly something that's a problem that's widely discussed. On the positive side, admittedly, only in one country that I know of, Saidi Aguaga described a unified approach to TB training in all of the medical schools in Tanzania. I think that's a unique situation. There is, as you well know, and substantial competition for curriculum time in medical schools. It's the same in Kenya as in Canada. And so it's very difficult to get any block of material inserted into the curriculum. I do think that there is increasing emphasis on the more general public health responsibilities of clinicians, and that young physicians coming out of medical schools now are, in fact, more attuned to there being a public health duty that they need to fulfill, but it's far from universal, it's far from very deeply felt, and it's generally, I think, not disease-specific, but generic. And I think that those of us who are on academic faculties need to continue to try to work training on tuberculosis into the curriculum, using that as the vehicle for instilling the public health responsibility for getting that that element of the training across. But it's a continual struggle.
Okay, so we call on the last one to question, please.
Yeah, Randall Reese from Denver. I was just talking about Dr. Hopewell, who said that this partnership in the Philippines really led to an overall improvement in the program, yet the percentage of the cases coming from the private practitioners looks like it's still around 10%. So I was wondering if you could explain how this partnership actually improved the National TB Program activities as well as the activities of the patients being seen in the private practitioners' offices.
Could I give you a quick personal view of that? In that I was invited to the Philippines, I think, sometime in the mid to late 1980s. And by the Philippine College of Chest Physicians. And they told me they would like me to talk about pulmonary embolism, about mechanical ventilation, about the adult respiratory distress syndrome, things that I could talk about. I said, but I'd like to talk about TB as well, because I think that I know something about that. I'm interested in that. And they said, not a problem here. We really don't need you to talk about that. So I ended up not talking about TB to a group of physicians who would logically be thought to be very concerned about TB. But on the other hand, it also seems to me, from what I recall of the origins of PhilCat, that PhilCat actually stimulated the government to develop a much better TB control program, that there wasn't a very good, and I hope I'm not stepping on anybody's toes, but I don't think there was a very good TB control program in the Philippines prior to PhilCat, and it's my impression that PhilCat actually pushed the government to make a better TB control program and continues to be very effective in partnering with the government program. Am I wrong?
I think even before PhilCat was organized in 1994, the government already was doing very well as far as the NTP program is concerned. But this is in the public sector. What PhilCat did really was try to engage the private doctors, because at that time, before the PhilCat was organized, they were not seeing eye to eye. So there was a different system of managing TB among the private doctors, and the NTP already has their program. So I truly believe also that before PhilCat, there was already a good program in the government. However, what PhilCat did was to enhance participation of the private sector. So it was PhilCat who made sure that we have a venue where the government and the private sector can discuss together what they need to do to further to reach TB control targets. And together, in 2004, we were able to reach the global target of 70%. And to date, PhilCat continues to support the government by trying to engage more providers, and what PhilCat does now is manage the implementation of the public-private mixed DAS strategy in behalf of the Department of Health for the Global Fund project. So what we're doing now really is we are the project management unit of the Department of Health for the implementation of the PPMD strategy under the Global Fund project.
Let me again respond to that. I'm still a medical student during that time, and but historically, when I try to review the history of the National TB Program, the National TB Program has already its infrastructure even during the early 80s. Infrastructure was important because this is how you deliver the services from top up to bottom. Perhaps the issue at that time was, as what Ami has mentioned, is the fact that there seems to be a barrier in terms of how public would address or case manage a TB case versus that of a private. And so the idea is really to make some fluidity between these two big healthcare providers in terms of creating an avenue where you can synchronize all your case management. So in terms of who's better or who's not, is not the issue, but it's just really creating an atmosphere where the two can link together and try to come up with more directional ways and approaches of handling or managing TB. So, yes, please, Dr. Okay. Gondry.
Yeah, Peter Gondry, KNCV. I've got a question for Mukund, or perhaps also for Phil. First of all, my appreciation for all three presentations. And also very excited about the positive experiences we heard over the past days, not only today. If I relate your stories with the initial story in the beginning of today of Catherine, where 38% of cases are still not diagnosed, then the question to you, in your opinion, or perhaps you have even calculated, what could be the gain if we would strengthen public-private mix worldwide at a global scale? And is it possible to identify regions and or countries where it would be very worthwhile to prioritize these actions?
Yes, I mean, for me the answers are simple. Yes, it should be possible to identify the regions, because, I mean, very clearly, if you take settings, well, cities will be the measure. You know, most cities is where you will find the private sector. Not just the private sector, but the different types of providers. The medical colleges will be mostly in cities. Large hospitals are in cities. Private practitioners, both legal and illegal, are likely to be more in cities. Compared to the rural areas, where, there'll be the private sector will be more sparse. So it should be relatively easy to target. And I do feel that if there is a combination of carrots and sticks, and not carrots alone, because we have been talking for last 10 years, we have been talking about PPM, but we have never talked about, you know, disincentives, legal frameworks, regulation, because it doesn't make sense. You don't begin with a stick. And then we are seeing that the benefits of taking a collaborative approach are very obvious. All these benefits are because of taking collaborative approach with the different providers. We cannot do, as I said, we simply may not be able to achieve it. There may be a limit to, you know, appealing to the conscience of the private sector or different providers and expecting them to do the public health the jobs. So it has to be that's why it is not a problem in Tanzania. They don't see the problem in Malawi. The program manager has a total position of control. And I was there, and the clinical officers who are really keen on, they get patients, they diagnose patients, they cannot treat. So they are willing to go to any length, they maintain records, they were preparing quarterly reports themselves, and sending it to TB program manager with the hope that they will get drugs to treat their patients. So I think there is a tremendous potential, and if you use the carrot and stick approach, I think we could, a substantial gains are possible. Again, there are limitations on doing it. Well, we are here in a symposium of, you know, working with the whole health system. So there are limitations on how much we can achieve for TB only. It has to be, the vision is for the public-private mix, there has to be the essential public health responsibilities of non-public physicians or institutions. And there has to be a package. If you have a package that the public health providers, the private health providers should be doing these things, and if you take it as a health systems issue, then the public sector and the governments may be able to, you know, be willing to compensate them as a package. So we should be moving in that direction. And I think TB could show a path, you know, it could be a pathfinder for that. Phil, you want?
Okay, thank you. And I think I'll really now call on the true last question for this session, because we have another important event to come.
Okay, thank you very much, Lynn, and thanks to all the speakers for a great symposium. Dr. Hopewell mentioned the competition for time in medical school curriculums for DOTS. Several years ago, the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute addressed it by giving a competitive award to junior faculty members in medical schools, and they called it the TB Academic Award, and they'd support a junior faculty member with the idea that the junior faculty member might become a champion for TB, and at least if he had some funding at a junior level, would be able to get some curriculum. Indeed, that happened, and that even happened before the acronym DOTS was coined. A few years ago, we had the opportunity to be involved in a program in the Philippines supported by USAID, and looking at a way to introduce the DOTS curriculum to medicals, we said, why don't we support similar junior investigators in Philippine medical schools. We called them Master TB Educators. We had a competitive award, and for a small amount of money, at least for the grant, over 3 years, we gave $20,000 to 10 medical schools, first five and then an additional five. And I had the opportunity to visit them all at one or another time, and the DOTS curriculum stuck different ways in different medical schools. And talking to Choli Yu, who was here up until earlier today, said that this has really been sustained, and even it's replicated to more medical schools, even without the money. So just by supporting someone who's going to be a champion for something that isn't that sexy might be a way to get this into medical schools.
Okay, so thank you for that input, Dr. Lee Rushman. And at this point, allow me to wrap up. And thank you to all the presenters for that wonderful presentation and enlightening aspects on private partnership. So at this point, may I call on the... Dr. Martinus Borgdorf to give us a...